Hey, Marvel Maniacs, welcome to another exciting episode of Guardians of the MCU. This is episode number 305. We're recording this on Monday, May 8th, 2023. It's Monday, right? Yeah, pretty sure. I think so.
Yep.
Yeah, it's Monday. Okay. I'm Tim. The voice you just heard is Sheba. And joining us tonight is Not John. So with that.
Hey, everybody. I'm Not John.
Hi, Not John.
Hi.
That is actually your name for this episode, is Not John.
Hey, I've been called worse. Today, even.
That's Eric. Hi, Eric. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Good to have you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So the reason why Eric is not John is because this episode, we're going to cover a little bit of news up front, and then we are going to get into a spoiler-filled review of Guardians of the Galaxy 3. I'm super excited to talk about this.
Me too.
And John has not yet seen the movie. He was supposed to see it over the weekend. He had some scheduling things, I think, with some kid commitments. And so it didn't happen. So he said, no, I have to stay away from the episode.
That's insane.
Yeah. But Eric has seen it. Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yes.
I may go see it again.
Sheba has, of course, seen it. Sheba saw it before any of us.
I saw it twice.
And she saw it twice.
Yeah.
And
she saw it the right way.
Yeah, I saw it in IMAX the first time on Tuesday. And then on Thursday, I saw it in D-Box with the moving seats. So,
oh, cool.
I had two different formats.
And interesting.
I got free stuff. And we can talk about that later, but I got free stuff.
Yeah.
Like, cool free stuff. I got toys.
Nice. Nice.
A toy and a t-shirt. It's very exciting.
Yeah. We will talk a little bit about the, this wasn't a red carpet premiere, but this was
an advance,
like a screening,
screening thing. And, and they did give some great perks. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that some. So let's see. With that, why don't we just jump right into it, folks? Let's get on to our news. Right. Going to kind of go through some of these here pretty quickly. So we are obviously, again, talking about Guardians of the Galaxy 3. It has basically kicked off the summer movie season with $114 million in domestic box office receipts. So that's U.S. and Canada. And another $168.1 million in international markets, giving us a total of $282.1 million for its opening weekend. It was expected to make like somewhere between 120 and 150 domestic. So it fell a little bit short of that. Not terrible though.
It's interesting that so many people, there was a lot of talk online about the fact that people were just going to not see this.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I don't understand why.
Apparently a lot of it was out of frustration for how phase 4 and 5 have been going so far, and people are becoming disillusioned with Marvel. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, if you're upset about that kind of stuff, this is apparently like the closest we've had to pre-phase 4 Marvel in a long time. Like, this is the one you don't want to skip.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the one to see.
And like, I know we'll talk about it later and everything like that, but part of me is a little sad because a lot of the stuff that has been coming out was more push for diversity. There was a lot of, women or people of color were at the forefront of it. Right. And it kind of just, because as a woman and a person of color, it almost hurts. Like,
yeah, I can see that.
It feels like it, maybe that's not what people, I don't know. It just ends up feeling like that's what people are doing. They're like, oh, we don't like this. And now that they're seeing this, they're like, oh, well, look, it's a movie where really any of the people of color are literally in color because they have face paint or body paint. They're the main character, or the main person, is Peter Quill. So, a straight white man. So it's just, and not to say that I didn't like this movie. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I'm just saying that everything else I also enjoyed, and it kind of hurts sometimes. Just a little.
So I hope, I'm going to say this, and I hope that this alleviates a little bit of it. I know that it won't alleviate all of it because it's still going to hurt, because there's still that direct correlation. Like you can't get away from the fact that there's a direct correlation there, and the fact that there are a lot of people online who just have really bad, ridiculous attitudes towards things that they shouldn't. But I think that a lot of the consensus was more that we're hitting the reset button. We have a new trilogy of phases, and there's been no big story movements so far, except Quantumania. We finally got introduced to the big bad and people didn't react to it well. So I think it's really more about just like a loss of direction. We had all this hype for the Infinity Stones and Thanos, and then now nobody knows the direction that the world building is going. So I get what you're saying, but I think there's also like story elements beyond that people are starting to grow impatient about.
Right.
But anyway, I know this is a lightning round, so we should get back to the news. Yep. I'm sorry.
Let's see, a couple more numbers behind this. MCU films have accounted actually for half of the 12 films that have opened to over $100 million domestic since the start of the pandemic. So 12 films have opening weekend over $100 million. MCU films have been half of those.
Nice.
So that's good. And in a relative sense, also looking at these, Guardians 2 had an domestic opening of $146.5 million back in 2017. So pre-pandemic to, I'm still reluctant to call this post-pandemic, but to wherever the heck it is that we are now, in the state of this, you know, obviously we're still dealing with some recovery. And as you guys mentioned, there's a little bit of angst about the MCU and what we've had over the last few years and some other things. So, you know, there obviously are definitely some factors. James Gunn confirmed that he and Marvel Studios have in fact discussed the future of Guardians of the Galaxy, but he offered no additional info. And he has confirmed again that this is his last film with Marvel Studios. So he's not doing any more Guardians movies. He's not doing any other movies with Marvel Studios. So anything that happens in the future with the Guardians of the Galaxy will be sans James Gunn. Let's see.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a conflict of interest at this point.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Since he's basically running DC now. So,
based
on what we've seen in the past from the theater to Disney Plus timeframes, of recent MCU films, it's estimated right now Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is going to hit Disney Plus in early August. So be on the lookout for that. Like August seems like right around the corner. But it's early May, so you know there's
keep
there's
in mind
still
the Black Panther was a little late. Wakanda Forever.
Yep.
So
yeah. And speaking of that, Quantumania is actually coming out on Disney Plus on May 17th. So in like
nine days.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Let's see. Over on the Disney Plus side of things, Secret Invasion, which is starting June 21st, as a reminder to everyone, is slated for 6 1 hour long episodes. So that seems to be like the event of the year. That's what so many people are waiting for this year with, you know, relative to the MCU. And I know I have, I mean, this is supposed to be a big thing. It's supposed to be one of those things that's going to be, you know, impactful across the MCU. Probably not as much impact as that storyline in the comic books had, but still, I think some pretty good impact.
Have you kept up the leaks at all?
No, I do not.
Okay. There's going to be some controversy. Okay. I don't think it's going to be bad. There are some character decisions they're making that people are going to totally WTF over and might like rage quit.
Mm.
We'll talk.
I mean,
as in the basically tagging certain characters as having been Skrulls for a certain amount of time.
Things like that, yeah.
Yeah, which is that, what they did in the comics, so. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like people are also just rage quitting generally.
It's very trendy to rage quit right now.
Yeah, they're just hating on everything. They're just like, I don't like it.
YouTube.com/ragequit. I think right. I want a channel that's
yeah
yeah.
And just
you're gonna rage quit everything.
I'm eventually gonna sign up for everything and rage quit it all.
And eventually you will rage quit about YouTube.
Rage quitting.
So
yes, yeah. rage quitting.
Yeah.
It's like so like, meta.
Yeah, people are just like mad at everything. And I'm like, are you okay? Yeah. Are you like, I mean, I understand you don't have to like everything, fine, but why are you hating everything? And why are you hating people that are enjoying the things that you don't like?
Yeah.
Let people enjoy the things.
Never steal someone else's joy.
Exactly. Anyways, we're back to our lightning round.
Let's see. In an interview, recent interview with James Corden, Mila Kunis has confirmed that she has, in fact, not been cast as Sue Storm. That's been a rumor that's been milling about. But she did seem to indicate that casting decisions have been made. So she is somewhere, somehow in the loop on this, apparently. Mm-hmm. Now, Eric, you had something to add to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I too have been keeping up with this. I knew about Mila Kunis for a little bit now. They have apparently cast Sue Storm, if the pretty well-vetted sources are correct. Am I allowed to say on the show here who it allegedly is?
Yeah, sure. It's all technically rumor at this point. So yeah, and we've mentioned him a few times.
Margot Robbie.
Yeah, I've seen that milling about. Yeah,
Harley Quinn allegedly. It's going to be her and Adam Driver is Reed Richards, which, you know, that's been rumored too. We were all hoping maybe he'd be Victor Von Doom.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
they'll do great, fine. But I feel like we're seeing them especially Margot Robbie, we're seeing her in everything.
She's prominent as Harley Quinn that this breaks. Yeah. Like, I feel like it's going to be distracting.
I would have kind of hoped if they weren't good. I mean, if they're not going with Emily Blunt, pick someone new. I would have been perfectly happy with someone new, like, you know, give someone else.
Or like show. Even like C-list, like someone that we might have known from television somewhere, but isn't really.
I will say with Margot Robbie, though, she is she's a pretty good character actress.
She can
really, when you look at her different roles, she can kind of turn certain things on and off, certain personality traits. And so I think she can really tone down a lot of things very well and do a very grounded character like Sue Storm.
Yeah. Well, she can, but
like an actor, she's great. And so is Adam Driver. Yes. I mean, we see them whenever we see her, especially Margot Robbie. We see her in everything.
And what she's in, it's typically more over the top roles. It's typically not showing the breadth of her competence as an actress. It's all of these, you know, niche roles. And I think that as Harley Quinn, she stands out so heavily. Like I said, to me, it feels like it's going to be a distraction. I'm not saying she can't do it.
Sure.
I'm saying I feel like it's going to be awkward for me as an audience member.
Yeah, could be. And then lastly, for our lightning round here, the writer's strike that was effective, May 1, I believe, is when the writer's strike went into effect.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is, if folks can remember back, when was the last writer's strike?
You remember when the Star Trek reboot came out, the one by J.J. Abrams? That was one of the biggest budget films where it was directly affected by the writer's strike, because one of the things is they can't do rewrites of the dialogue while they're filming.
Right.
Actors, if they don't have writer's credits, can make small, seemingly inconsequential changes to dialogue, and it's not considered writing, and therefore you can do some ad lib sometimes, but you can't rewrite scenes or anything. Which, the reason I bring this up is, gets what starts filming like tomorrow. Deadpool 3. Like within the next couple of weeks. Guess what relies on actors ad libbing? Guess who is the one actor in that movie who is not going to be allowed to ad lib, because Ryan Reynolds has also got a writer's credit and a producer's credit on that film.
Yeah.
He's the only one who can't. Well, maybe not the only, but basically now Marvel tends to bake in reshoot opportunities as part of their schedule. But A, mm-hmm. how long is the strike going to go? And B, so much of Deadpool 1 and 2 is ad-libbed.
Yeah.
Do you really want to reshoot the entire movie?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of issues there. We already know.
I'm so scared for Deadpool. So scared.
They've already stated that Blade is going to be delayed. And basically for exactly the reason that you gave, Eric, that Marvel does have, like a lot of other movies do, is that they do a lot of rewrites as they produce, as they're doing principal photography. And so they've basically already said, yeah, no, but Blade is they're just going to like stop for a while because they need to be able to have that ability to rewrite and adapt and adjust as they continue their production. So
Speaking of delays, we have a little bit of an audio one here. Yeah. Some studios are continuing with production for stuff that's already been scripted and written. And then others are just stopping. Pulling the plug entirely for the moment. And Blade is one of those. It's just all hands off deck.
Yeah. And we can pretty much expect at this point that every MCU production, both big screen and small screen, so including Disney Plus stuff, is going to suffer a delay because of this.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, you know, reading some of the things that I've read about the writer's strike, you know, the writers definitely deserve more pay.
You know, I'm on board with it. Like, it's going to suck for us, but it's important.
Yeah.
I mean, we survived one writer's strike. Well, we can, you know, we'll be fine. We'll survive.
Yeah, but Sheena, this is Deadpool. Let's restart the writer's strike like a month from now.
If they're going to delay it, then it sucks that it's going to get delayed, but at least we'll get the same quality that we're going to get.
No, my understanding is Deadpool is going to continue with principal photography. Yeah.
Or maybe we'll get something cool like Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog and it'll be super cool and interesting.
That is an excellent point. You know, I rewatched that 2 days ago.
I still listen to that. I have all the songs on my iPod that's connected to my car because my car's old. And every time it pops in, I sing along to the top of my lungs to every single song.
It's a good soundtrack. And it really was a direct result of the writer's strike. Joss Whedon approached Felicia Day on the picket lines and they were talking and he said, you can't sing by chance, can you? She's like, well, actually, yeah, I can. And that was the start of Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. It was there literally on the side of the street in the picket lines.
Yeah. I mean, you know, still Joss Whedon is a little, you know, but these days, but
other people were involved in
it. Brothers were mostly involved in it. He was just kind of side. Yeah, Jed Whedon. It was mostly Jeb. Yeah.
Marissa Tencheroen.
Yeah. It wasn't as much. She wasn't the big credit there.
Yeah. So. It wasn't as much Joss.
Yeah. But that was a fantastic thing. So maybe we'll get something really cool out of it. And maybe Deadpool will be fantastic because some magic will happen and, you know, something amazing will happen.
Yeah.
But I really do hope that the writers do get what they are looking for, what they need, because they do deserve it. And a lot of the things that we want, all entertainment really does heavily rely on their expertise. So
they've been looking at a 23% reduction in pay. Ugh. Now, if you imagine taking home 23% less of what you're taking home right now.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. I
totally get it.
Yeah. So. All right. So, if we're ready for this, I think we're ready. I'm ready. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready, but is everyone else ready for this?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. All right, folks. So, this is it. This is your last opportunity to turn back because we are now going into spoiler country. This is a full-on spoiler-filled review of Guardians of the Galaxy 3. So, first off, I'm going to pitch this initial question to our guest first. One of the early reviewers of the film, and this has gone around quite a bit in a lot of the film's promotion, has said that this is the best MCU film since Endgame. Eric, Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
Wow. Talk about putting me on the spot.
You're the guest.
Get your hate mail ready. That's E-R-I-K at randomchatter.com.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So I'm thinking back over phase four and what we've got of phase five so far. And I think that it's easy for people to dismiss a lot of the theatrical stuff, but then they forget things. Mm-hmm. I think Wakanda Forever, I loved it when it first came out. Now that some time has passed, looking back on it, rewatching, it's still like one of the best phase four, phase five movies. It's definitely a top-notch movie overall. I think I liked the first one better. But it's still good. And I think people also forget Shang-Chi because they're not familiar with the character and he hasn't popped up anywhere else. And so people forget about it. Those were two really good movies since Endgame.
Yeah.
But I think this is probably the best film since Endgame. And I think it has to do specifically with the writing and the themes and the execution of those thematic elements in this film.
Tiba, your thoughts?
I loved this movie. So I kind of agree. Like, I mean, like Eric said, I loved Shang-Chi. I rewatch that one regularly just because. So I love it. I've enjoyed everything so far. I know people have not liked some of the things, but I've liked them for different reasons. All the movies, like whether they were just fun to watch, entertaining, they got me out of like thinking about random other things. I've enjoyed them, but I agree that this one is probably one of the better movies that we've seen. Just because it's so well written. James Gunn really knows how to do a larger
ensemble
cast.
Yes, an ensemble cast.
Like he does a good job with that because he gives everyone enough time that you are like, yes, there's still one main character that you're focused that you'll kind of focus on, but he still gives everyone else enough time that you feel connected to them, that you feel that there's some kind of growth or to their character arcs. And he does such a good job with that. Plus he throws in music that works so well with whatever is going on screen that it's beautiful. Like anything I've seen from James Gunn has always left me feeling so excited. It's fantastic. I feel like I've watched something just spectacular. And that's what I feel about this one. I'm going to go so far because when I saw it the first time, I was like, I don't know. Do I like this one more, like the first Guardians or the Guardians 3? Like which one is my favorite? I'm going to say after seeing a second time, I kind of feel like I think I like the third one more than the first one, even though I love the first one. I'm not saying that that's bad or anything like that. The first one I absolutely love. There's something extra I love about this one.
The third one, the character dynamics are already established and we're already right there. It already feels like family instead of watching the entirety of the movie with the family coming together. Like you're already there in the family. And back to your question, Tim, like I think that question is a good thought experiment. And I have thrown that comment around quite a bit as I've discussed the movie with people after having seen it. But I think ultimately that question doesn't matter. The question is it good?
Mm-hmm.
Is it really good? Is it definitely like a drop everything you're doing and go see? And I think yes, it is. It doesn't have to be the best movie since Endgame. Now, I would argue it probably is, but it doesn't have to be. So even if the answer is no, that's okay. It's still a phenomenal Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
For me, It's tough. First of all, recency bias is a hard thing. You know, considering like just saw this within last couple of days.
I was going to say like yesterday or something, right? I got to see it 3 p.m. on Thursday. So I left out.
Very good.
I figure I can recover from the hospital on my couch or I can recover from the hospital in a movie seat. But either way, I'm going to sit. So I might as well sit and enjoy it.
Sure. Yeah. So you know, that does make it hard. I really did really love Shang-Chi. I know that I'm kind of in a relative minority for Doctor Strange 2. I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. I thought it was really well done. And certainly for Black Panther 2. So, you know, yeah, there were some films that really didn't meet expectations, but those to me did. And this one certainly did. I thought there were kind of some pacing things going on in the first couple of acts, but the third act like really pulled everything together and just, you know, did really well. So going into that, I guess kind of, you know, I figured so much of this is about characters and the character arcs. So it's kind of how I have, I guess, a lot of our discussion broken down, but before getting into that, I do kind of want to talk about story overall. So Sheba, what were your thoughts, just kind of big picture, on the story that we got out of this film?
I knew that they were going to focus a little bit more on Rocket, and not knowing Rocket's story, even in the comics, like personally, I knew a little bit about, what I knew about Rocket was very little. Mm-hmm. Getting to see his backstory, getting to be able to spend more time with him, I loved, like, I'd always from the first movie, and every time we'd seen him, I kind of started to have a soft spot for Rocket. This one just really nailed it and made me just go, oh, yep, nope, I love Rocket. Rocket is wonderful. So because of that, I really enjoyed seeing that part of the story. Peter wasn't as much of it in this movie, but it wasn't a big deal to me. I was like, all right, cool, we've seen Peter in all the things, it's fine. But yeah, story wise, I thought it was fine. I was kind of hoping for more Gamora, but also I'm a big fan of Gamora, so that's why I wanted more Gamora. But otherwise, yeah, I thought it was fine. I can see what you mean by it being a little slow at the beginning. There could have been some issues there, but I had so much fun with it that it didn't really bother me that much.
Eric.
So first of all, Rocket Raccoon is my spirit animal. with Deadpool as a close runner up. So I loved the fact that he was so prominent in this film. And I like I think what the story boils down to is this. In all my years of reviewing movies, to me, the equation is that story equals plot plus character development. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why this story worked so well. It was good storytelling, not necessarily because the plot was strong, but because the character progression and character journeys were strong. And the plot was also good, but I think it was more just all of the ingredients coming together. And then what you were saying, Sheba, earlier about the fact that James Gunn does really well with an ensemble cast. Mm-hmm. So I think that what made this movie work so well is there were a lot of powerful moments. Mm-hmm. And that's something that has not been as consistent through the MCU for the last couple of phases as it had been in some earlier stuff. And some of the earlier MCU stuff could have done better with this too, I think, to be fair. But I think that James Gunn really nailed it with this one. You really got emotionally invested and wrapped up in what was going on with these characters, whether it was a particular scene where they were in peril or whether it was the larger overall storyline about somebody being in peril. I think mm-hmm. that was a big deal. And in fact, I think it was, I have to think this was intentional. And if so, it was brilliant. Everybody on the internet believing someone was going to die.
Oh, gosh.
Somebody was
gonna die. Oh, my God.
If you look at the trailers were specifically cut mm-hmm. in such a way that you could pick pretty much half of the team.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Say, look at the trailer. The trailer indicates they're going to kill this character off.
Totally.
All the way through. And so right up to that scene at the end, I'm like, so help me, James Gunn, if you kill Rocket, I'm not going to do anything to you because I'm not that kind of person. I'm not some crazy internet stalker, but I'm going to send you a very, very sad message on Twitter and I'm going to find a way to make you cry.
I legit, because
you don't do that to my Rocket.
As I was sitting there, I was like, if Rocket dies, I'm going to throw hands. And I'm like, like you said, I wasn't going to hurt James Gunn or anything because it just means he made a good movie. But at the same time, I would be so hurt. Walk out.
Like it would have been almost that point.
I would have cried. I would have, my face paint would have like gone, would have been destroyed. And I would have I would have literally been so upset. And so I watched, like when we were watching it, my friend and I were both like, were you tense the entire time? I was like, I was tense the entire time because I was so worried that whatever, like this was the moment that this is the end. Yeah. This is the end of Rocket. This is the end. It was just so stressful.
There were multiple times throughout the movie where you were convinced that, I mean, there was a lot of times you were convinced Rocket might not make it. There were times you were convinced Drax wasn't going to make it. Yep. A couple of times you were like, well, maybe Nebula's going to go. Mm-hmm. There were several times where you thought Peter was going to go.
Yeah.
I mean, the only ones that safe were Gamora and Mantis.
But Mantis, they kept throwing her off of things and you would hear like a crack. And I was like,
she fell down more often. I kept thinking she's going to break her spine.
I was like, did you break her neck? Like, are you okay? No, she never said anything. She just, all you hear is a crack and you're like, that doesn't sound good.
Over and over and over, she just kept falling.
Yeah,
I was like, and it was never brought up. It was never mentioned.
No.
Characters never called her out on it. It was just.
They never asked if she was okay. Nobody said anything. Then she just got up and brushed herself off and kept walking. And I was like, okay.
It was like all those ragdoll physics games on the iPhone, but in live action.
I was so concerned.
Yeah.
So,
I think that's what was so brilliant was that you really cared. Like you were on the edge of your seat through this movie, and it wasn't because of action scenes. It was because what's going to happen to these characters that now I consider family members. That it looks dire. I'm going to lose someone here, and I don't want that. And so, what's the cost?
Yeah.
What's the consequence of everything I'm watching play out? And the stakes as a result were through the roof. And it's been so long since we've had a movie in the Marvel universe where the stakes are that high. And you know, not everybody's safe walking out of this. That makes a massive difference in a film.
Yeah.
Very true. So want to get into characters and character arcs. Obviously there's a lot of overlap between some of these. And there's a, you know, like 10 characters or so that we want to get to. So just kind of, you know, not spend too much time on these. But I think there's some good points to be brought up on all of them. I think we'll start off, I guess, with kind of the primary antagonist of the High Evolutionary. Eric, thoughts on the High Evolutionary?
So I have read Marvel Comics on and off since the late 80s, early 90s, and probably more off than on. I know of the High Evolutionary, but I'm not that familiar with him or what he's done in the comics. So I didn't have a lot of investment in his character going into it. I think the actor did a great job with him. I thought he was a good antagonist. I don't have any particular love or hate for him either way. I think that it was good. Like, I think this was a solid antagonist. I think that he played the part well. It was a good part of the story. He was written well. I have no complaints. Like this was exactly what I was hoping to see in an antagonist.
Yeah. And he was, it seems like he was one of the, because most of the villains that we've been seeing have been sympathetic. You could at least with some point, any of their points, you're going, oh, okay, well, I can understand. Like, yeah, they're doing it at they're going to the extreme, but I can understand where they're coming from. With this character, I was like, no, I don't like you. You didn't do good, sir. And I don't understand what you're doing. Like you were just like, it was like black and white, straight villain. Like it wasn't, and like, oh, I can understand. That's the thing. We haven't had one. Yeah, we haven't. And he was terrifying. Even just him yelling at poor Rocket or anyone was just, even when he was being kind of what you thought was sweet, like even there's points where he's holding Rocket's head and he's kind of grasping it in a way you're like, it's supposed to seem loving, but you're like, I'm terrified for Rocket still.
Affectionate.
Yeah, it was like twice.
twist yeah, and snap as
both times. Point. Both times he held Rocket's hand in his head in his hands, and I was like, that's not the way you hold people's heads in your hand. Like that's no. So
yeah, it looked like he was going to like crush his skull or something. Right. Like you know, it was very aggressive. Yeah,
it's like a fake affection, and he created entire civilizations to basically commit genocide over right. and over and over
exactly.
again.
Exactly.
Yeah,
like it's been so long since we've seen what I would call true pure evil, because like you said, we've gotten to a point in cultural storytelling now where all of the good guys have to have faults and all of the bad guys mm-hmm. have to be sympathetic and everything right. is a shade of gray.
Yeah.
And I kind of miss the old classic Star Wars trilogy days of, no, you know, that's the bad guy. When Darth Vader walks right. in the hallway of the Tantive IV, you know, that guy's just evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that this antagonist was in fact someone you can get behind. Just like, no, we got to right. stop this guy.
Right.
His motivations internally were altruistic,
right?
But to
but also
the standards,
psychotic.
Yeah, but right. also very, yeah. So, I mean, but not to him. To him, it wasn't psychotic. To him, it all right. made sense. Externally, it absolutely was psychotic. And it's one of those things that, you know, you look at like Thanos, and yeah, there's some people who I think could say, well, you know, Thanos. Yes, definitely an altruistic motivation, and you know, I mean,
even in universe,
maybe he had something right, going.
Like hashtag.
Yeah,
you know, it's like maybe the guy had something going, like you know, wrong, but you know, maybe there's something to it. With this guy, with the high evolutionary, flat out, no,
nope.
no, there's yeah. no one who could like step no. in and really agree with
he's
this.
Like, well, so. Maybe he was. It's like, no, he was not.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
no interest in a redemption arc there, nothing. Just like just stop the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a very compelling antagonist. And you know, with how they wove him in, I mean, obviously his story and Rocket's story were lockstep, and with all the flashbacks that they did. And that's probably one of the things to me story-wise that did have some of that interruption. While I appreciated a lot of the backstory, I think they probably went like 20 or 30% too much of that backstory. And I think that's what resulted to me in some of those pacing issues.
Yeah.
But then it was also the team doing their thing to pursue what they needed to help Rocket. And I think it was kind of like one too many things. It was kind of like, okay, look, the story needs to get where it's going. And it took too long to get there. And that's just where those first couple of acts were like, all right, I get this. Let's just get there now. You know,
I think it allowed more screen time for Rocket, because otherwise Rocket was basically at a hospital bed for the entire movie.
Right. Exactly.
So I do understand that side of it. And I was really upset with what happened with Layla. Saw it coming, you know, but it was disturbing, but you needed to be able to spend some time there to make it that disturbing. When Nebula's talking about how what was done to Rocket was worse than what Thanos did to her.
Yeah.
And her entire backstory is nothing but torture.
Yeah.
Right. So
exactly
for her to say that, like, we have to be able to feel that as an audience. And I agree emphatically with what you're saying, Tim, about the pacing. And this definitely had a detrimental effect on the pacing, but I think it had a beneficial effect from a narrative point of view on being able to really feel what Rocket's feeling in that one moment. And then in the aftermath afterwards, and then even retroactively through the entire trilogy and everything coming before in the MCU. I mean, this kind of paints who he's always been, and we just didn't know it.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is that it made me just love Rocket so much more, because you can see at the beginning, he seems so like hardened, and he's like, oh, whatever, I don't care about anybody, I don't care about you, and blah, blah, blah. But you see moments and glimpses of his kindness when he's even interacting with Groot in the first movie. You see it in the second movie when he's interacting with Yondu. You see it with Thor in Infinity War. And you kind of just see little tiny glimpses of Rocket. This kind of just goes, look, he was not always like, he wasn't the way we saw him in the first Guardians. He was actually very sweet. He still is very sweet, but he's just so afraid of letting people get close to him because he lets people close and they all just get taken away. So
yeah,
you kind of start seeing that of him, and it just made me love him so much more. I can't even, like, I don't know what happened, but the minute when he comes back and everyone's like super excited that he's back and you're like, same, everyone. Like, it just, I was crying so much, but also trying not to cry. Cause I was, when I went to go to the advanced screening, I was in Gamora face paint. So I was like, I can't, if I start blinking and crying, so I had to hold it in so badly, but I needed that for that emotional connection, that clarity for his character.
Funny you mention how he loses everyone he gets close to. The one character that traditionally he's been closest to is Groot, who kind of can't exactly die.
Right.
Yeah, there's so much about Groot that kind of, you know, he keeps him alive or something. Let's stick with Rocket for another minute here on this, because, you know, again, just so much of this story was very much about him.
Rocket.
It centered on him and, you know, this whole history with the High Evolutionary and really the whole quest that they were on. I did have some issues with them kind of overdoing a bit some of that backstory, and I do, you know, agree with all the reasons that you guys gave, that they did kind of have to have some additional exposition there for it. I liked the closure that the character got in the High Evolutionary ship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was awesome. As obviously he's helping to get these kids out, but then he finds this whole room filled with animals, and really, you know, has that opportunity there. And then, you know, he's fighting the High Evolutionary and losing until basically the rest of the Guardians show up. And I love that it comes back to this kind of team aspect of the Guardians, that they're stronger together. And they are a family and all that. And that worked really well. And we'll talk about the end credit scene toward the end of the show. But, you know, it's that he's kind of before that as they were. The characters were kind of all going their different ways. And Rocket basically now staying as like the center of what will eventually be the Guardians. I think was a very meaningful thing for that character.
Yeah. Well, and James Gunn said all along, going as far back to the first movie, and I think people kind of ignored him on it, where he's kind of always claimed that Rocket Raccoon's always been the main character. Now, the stories don't necessarily reflect that, especially Guardians 2. Mm-hmm. But... Yeah. You can tell that Rocket was always kind of the center of the group.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And I loved it. Like when I know we're going to talk about the end credit scene later, but even at the end of the movie, when everyone's just kind of going, you know, like when you're the captain now, like this is your team, you're going to lead the Guardians. Something just, it's almost like, especially seeing his backstory and how he tried to have a family at the beginning with Lila and everyone else, which also funny, random connection thing. But Lila is the name of Clint's daughter, but also is played by voice by Linda Cardellini, who is Clint Barton's wife. Anyways, that was random. I just realized that. I mean,
Lila was in the comics too.
Yes. But I just thought it was an interesting connection that was all same voice actor. Yeah. Anyways, but I loved that he was trying to find a family at the beginning with Lila and Tiefs and Floor and all of them. And then he lost that family. And then he got the Guardians as a family. He kind of lost them a little bit during Infinity War. And like during that time, they came back. And now right at the end, he's losing them again. And they're kind of like you can almost tell that he's heartbroken that they're gonna be leaving. But then when they tell him that you're going to be you're the leader now, he's kind of like, oh, wait, I can take care of people. Like I can, people believe that I can take care of people and I'm not going to lose them because of that. It's a really sweet moment. And I really, really loved that for him. And I don't know, this movie just made me love Rocket even more than I already did. And it just made me just so happy.
I want to get on to Adam Warlock. Adam Warlock was the character who I think was anticipated the most in this movie, mm-hmm. because we had that little bit of a tease at the end of Guardians 2. Mm-hmm. And of course the interesting reveal that the entire oh gosh, the race has left my head. The whole race of beings.
No, yeah. The Supremes.
No.
Oh my Sovereign. Gosh. The Sovereign, yes. That the Sovereign were actually a creation of the High Evolutionary. Mm-hmm. That was a reveal that I didn't expect. Mm-hmm. And so Adam Warlock, again, you know, so highly anticipated that we were going to see him in this movie. I did not expect him to be to come out that hard, that fast, so early in the movie, and basically beat the crap out of everybody, you know, while he was trying to get Rocket. And I like that whole tie-in with that he was basically, you know, doing a job for the High Evolutionary. Right. What are your thoughts on Adam Warlock?
I thought he was I like that he was so powerful, but also very childlike, just because he was released early from his cocoon. So he's still kind of fuddling around trying to figure out what to do or how to do what he's supposed to do, but he's got so much power. And again, I don't know a lot of his comic book origins. So that's me just basing it off of his movie character. And I thought Will Poulter did a great job. I still remember him from Line with Prince Caspian, I think it was, he was in. And I always called him Eyebrows because I could never remember his name at the time. But he's come a long way since that movie, obviously. But yeah, I thought he did a fantastic job. He was kind of had this innocent sweetness, but also I was terrified of him at certain parts. But then I was so happy at the end where, you know, they just... at the end of it, when everybody's hugging Peter and he was like, oh, he just kind of joins in and awkwardly hugs them all. So I'm like, oh, that's so adorable. I liked him. I liked his character. I thought he was a little bit of comic relief here and there, but I thought there was so much going on and so many other stressful moments for all the other characters that it was nice to kind of have somebody that was, yes, a little, you know, did go hard, but also was kind of a little bit sweet and naive in a way.
I did not like Adam Warlock.
I am 100% in that camp with you, Eric. I don't.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't like what they did with him. I did not like Will Poulter in the role. What we saw of him in his opening scene, I thought was good, and then the character fell apart to me once they actually gave us the character.
Once I'm like, he did anything.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, no, yeah. This is not the Adam Warlock I signed up for.
So my first experience with Adam Warlock was in the 6-issue Infinity Gauntlet storyline from the comics, mm-hmm. from back around, again, late 80s, early 90s. It was
this is the original Infinity Stone story.
Crossover.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, and I still recommend, if you've never picked it up, get the trade paperback off of Amazon or something, or Marvel Unlimited, or wherever you can get it. It's a good story. It's only 6 issues. It is so much more epic in every literal sense than the MCU's depiction of the Infinity War and Endgame. They watered down the Infinity Gauntlet a gazillion times for the movie franchise. And that's okay. They needed to.
Yeah. Oh, they absolutely had to.
It was insane. And it was only Adam Warlock's strategic thinking, his, I almost want to say stoicness, aloofness. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just, you have a character here who conversationally is going toe-to-toe with the likes of death and order and chaos and the living tribunal, like these conceptual entities that haven't even mm-hmm. been introduced yet in the Marvel Universe. And he's just standing there going toe-to-toe with them, not because he can outpower them, but he's like, no, you will listen to what I have to say. And then we get to this movie and he's a goofball.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work for me. And I don't have to have everything straight like it is in the comics. You know, been watching comic book movies for years and all the different deviations, right. But this felt like it wasn't the same character. It felt like they broke him.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree. Peter Quill. Thoughts on Quill's character in this?
I mean, he wasn't in it as much, but I was okay with it. I wanted to see more Rocket, so I was happy with that. I wanted to see more Gamora, more Nebula. I wanted to see literally everybody else. I was fine with the amount of Peter Quill we got.
Exactly. That sentence you just said. Like, I think this was the right amount of Peter Quill. Yeah. Not too little, not too much. The only thing I will say, the elevator conversation got a little drawn out and a little exposition-y. Mm-hmm. Other than that, yeah, this had the right amount of Peter. Peter was not the main draw, and I think that's as it should be.
Yeah.
Also,
go ahead, Sheba.
No, I was just going to say a random fun fact, but the one, you know, when Nebula's holding Peter in her arms, that's mm-hmm. actually not a real, that's a prop. It's like a it's not real. It's just
it would make
watch the interview where what's his name, Chris Pratt and James Gunn are talking about that. It's not appropriate. I mean, it's silly and funny, but it's kind of not inappropriate. It's kind of not appropriate for this. But if you want to check it out, go check it out because it's really entertaining. That's it. Yeah, that's cool. All I'll say.
Yeah, my take on Quill in this. I like what they did with his arc overall. I can appreciate the sense of loss and grieving that he had early on over Gamora, and then he got over it. And I think that was a good evolution for his character because he needed to get over it.
Yes.
Yet he still kind of, you know, established some semblance of a relationship with this Gamora, which I think helped with that because he needed to separate the two Gamoras and acknowledge that, okay, look, I had one Gamora and I loved her and I lost her. And here's this other Gamora, but she is not the same Gamora. She is not a replacement. So like, you know, even right to the very end of the film where they had an opportunity to kind of talk. And I think that was good closure for him. And I also appreciated that he basically was able to channel the energy from his grief into his pursuit to save Rocket, because that was the motivating. He was the vehicle that moved the story forward in that regard. He was adamant that I am going to save Rocket. He is my best friend. And this is, you know, we're going to solve this problem.
But I like the fact that they kept that real and they never turned it into, I'm going to be the hero. And instead it was like, no, whatever it takes, we have to fix Rocket.
Yeah.
Right.
So it never overpowered or overshadowed that.
Yeah. So we've mentioned Gamora. Sheba, go ahead with Gamora. What are your thoughts with her?
It was very interesting to see, I mean, because she, like you said, she was different. She was a very different person than the Gamora that we were used to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice that Zoe Saldana actually showed that about her. Like, there were times where she just got so angry and you were like, Gamora would get angry, of course, she had moments, but it was never to that extent and that extreme. And so you really were like, wow, this is really a different Gamora, because the other Gamora was a little bit more gentler. Because I mean, in the second one, she's waving to Rocket and to Groot, to baby Groot, going, Groot, go do this or take care. Okay, hi Groot, I see you. Okay, go do this. She was a lot more gentler, whereas this one she was just so much more angry. And especially at the end, seeing her with all the Ravagers and being like, finally feeling like she has like family and laughing and just kind of being with them, you were like, oh, this is definitely a different Gamora. And that Zoe Saldana was able to take that role and make it so different. I really liked seeing that.
Yeah. Eric?
I agree. I think there's a lot of, I think we've hit some of the biggest characters in the film. Gamora for me was yet another part of an ensemble cast where it was done correctly. We had the right amount of Gamora. Mm-hmm. And I liked the fact that it felt like a different Gamora. And so kudos to both the writers and to Zoe for the performance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no complaints. Like this is, I think this fit great. I think that this also ties into the Peter thing. I think the two of them both kind of playing off of one another, whether intentionally or not, to try to kind of figure out how this working relationship is going to function throughout this adventure. Mm-hmm. I liked how it played out. One quick side on the Ravagers. I did like seeing them come back and Stallone come back. And a lot of people don't realize this, but some of those characters, those are the original Guardians of the Galaxy characters from 1968, 1969 comic book.
Right.
Sylvester Stallone's character was actually, he wasn't one of the originals. He came by shortly after that, but Yondu was in it. Martin X was in it. The crystalline guy. Those were original Guardians. So that was a really cool cameo.
Yeah. I agree with all that with Gamora. Let's see, Groot. I'll start off. We actually didn't have a whole lot from Groot. Particularly that we haven't seen before. We still did through much of the movie kind of have kind of that slightly awkward Groot that I wasn't a fan of how they built the physicality of the character from the Christmas special, the holiday, the Guardians holiday special.
It was better here though.
I agree.
Yeah, they did do a little bit of tweaking, particularly I think after he had to regrow his body. they made a few changes and then, and without getting into the end credit scene, the Groot that we saw in the end credit scene was freaking massive. And that was nuts. So, but I'm beyond that, you know, Groot was Groot. Yes. He did say something different at the end of the movie, which I actually did not like.
I think he
needed to continue speaking in the same language that he always speaks.
So the thing with that, because I saw that, or James Gunn, I think, had referred to it or talked to about it, or there was an article, something that wasn't actually being able to talk. It's just, it was supposed to be symbolic of how we had spent so much time with the Guardians that we were able to understand what he was saying.
Oh, that was
but in actuality. Yeah. But in actuality, it still says, "I am Groot." But it's actually because we've spent so much time with these characters, we now can understand what they're saying.
All right.
So that puts a new spin on it. But here's the problem with that. Yeah. It wasn't evident to any of us.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I was confused too. I was like, eh? And then I saw things afterwards about reading about that. And I was like, oh, okay.
Interesting.
Well, that makes sense, because it's interesting because Gamora doesn't understand Groot the entire movie. And then at the end, she also starts to understand what he's saying.
Yeah.
And we do too. So I was like, oh, okay, all right, that makes sense. So it was kind of,
they should have done something like weird with the audio and like had him say, "I am Groot," but drop the volume to like 25%. And then the other 75% was what we were actually hearing. They should have done some sort of little effects trick.
Yeah.
And I think that then we would have gotten it, because I did not get that. And Tim, look on your face. It looks like you didn't get it either.
No. It totally makes sense. Now that you brought that up, Sheba. But it needed to be more apparent to the viewer, I think.
Right.
Yep.
So any other comments on Groot?
No, I mean, he was a backpack character, which is to say, like, he kind of he followed them around and he pulled the guns out when he needed to.
Yeah.
He did the kaiju thing when he needed to. And otherwise, like, he was a utility character. He was the Chewbacca. You know, he's cute. He has a lot of heart. But he's basically a character the other people wear like a backpack, and they break him out when they need to use him.
I did think the one thing was funny when he says Groot, kaiju, and Groot just that was fantastic. And I'm a huge fan of like kaiju and stuff. That was great.
And I just love that Peter's screaming, "Not Groot!" God, you know, like, no, you don't feel that. And I was like, oh my God, it's hilarious.
Yeah. Drax. Drax had an interesting evolution in this movie. Eric, what are your thoughts on Drax?
I mean, Destroyer. I like the fact that
Drax the father.
Yeah. So two things about Drax. One was that whole kind of coming full circle with why he became who he was in the first movie in the first place, which is the death of his wife and daughter at the hands of Ronan. In the comics, I think it was at the hands of Thanos. But I like that they brought that full circle and they actually gave him some actual character depth instead of just the comic relief. Mm-hmm. But then also I like the fact that he and Mantis, because Mantis is a hard character to do much with in a movie like this. Like if you don't have some sort of animal for her to control, like at the end, yeah, what else do you do with her? She's not a combat driven character. She isn't technical. She's not a leader. She's the group therapist, right? And so how do you have that in an action movie? I like the fact that, and I know I'm kind of blending the two characters here together, but I like the fact that they gave Drax and Mantis kind of a journey to go on, the two of them throughout the movie, because I think that the two of them combined was greater than the two individual parts.
And I think we got to see part of that even in volume two, and it just kind of carried, it continued
true
with the Christmas special, and then it continued on here, just kind of their bond. But it was also nice to see Mantis at the end going, no, I don't need you. Like, I need to do this on my own. I need to go do my own thing, because she's just kind of like, I've been either connected with somebody for so long. I don't know what to do on my own. And I'd like to go explore that. So I enjoyed that she was able to get that moment for herself at the end of the movie.
Which was also bittersweet though, because Drax like never connected with anyone and now he finally has, and he has to let that person go.
Right.
Yeah. I do like how they were able to take, you know, the kind of almost this dual personality of Drax, where he is super serious and literal, yet he can be silly and relatable to kids. You know, that works really well. And I love that ended up being his thing.
I think that was a really good thing to throw in there for him. I think it worked really well.
Yeah. Agreed.
We did kind of touch on Mantis. Anything else to say with Mantis?
No. Okay. I mean, I just thought it was really interesting just watching it the second time, just watching sometimes Mantis in the background of things, and you're like, oh, she's just randomly floating around.
Oh my gosh.
You just don't realize, because the first time I watched, I was focusing on everybody else. And then afterwards, I was just kind of like, what's going on in the background? I'm like, what is Mantis doing there?
When they were floating, I caught it
the first time, because like you said, there were a couple of points I thought she broke her neck.
When they were floating through space to the really super gross biological planet thing, which was super gross, by the way, like that was just nasty. Like everyone's kind of like moving with purpose and she's just like randomly tumbling.
I was like,
control.
It's like, oh, look, there goes Mantis. What is she doing?
Yeah.
Right. Speaking of which, the most tragic underutilization of Nathan Fillion ever. He needs a costume cape in the MCU. I'm glad they didn't just like not use him at all, and they used him for something. And this was funny and he did great, needs to be like, he needs his own movie.
I do like the actor. Nebula has shaken out to be my favorite Guardian.
Don't like her when James Gunn writes her.
Her whole story arc through all the movies that she has been in, like, you know, initially, you're meant to hate her because of the friction between her and Gamora, and then.
Right.
For me, like, I just kept on liking her more and more and more. And then I love the fact that like Rocket did these upgrades on her. Yeah. So she kind of like embraced the whole cyborg thing. And it totally makes sense that, like, you know, Rocket would want to like tinker with her, and like, and Rocket likes weapons. So I'm going to make your arm into a giant blaster. Oh yeah. And it's going to do all sorts of other things. I love what like she evolved into. I really, really like her character.
And like how much she, like, and again, that's another thing that it still kind of goes back to Rocket, but just how much he connects with people, even though he's so grumpy and angry. And even Nebula herself is grumpy and angry all the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But mm-hmm. she connects so much with Rocket because she defends him like crazy. Like, even when Gamora's like, why should we go after him? And she's like, he helped me. That's why. He's part of, right. like, he's part of this crew. And Nebula does, like, yes, she cares about Gamora, but she doesn't really care. Like, she cares about everybody on the team, obviously, but there's something special about her relationship with Rocket. And I like seeing kind of those vulnerable moments for Nebula, because she kind of, you just assume she's angry all the time, but that's just kind of how she shows her affection, is through that uh-huh. kind of anger. And yeah, I agree with him. I thought she was fantastic. I'm glad more of her.
I mean, I agree with most of what the two of you are saying. I think my issue is there's something about her delivery that's off. Mm-hmm. And I like Karen Gillan's performance of Nebula in the other films. Mm-hmm. So I think it's something about the way James Gunn writes her dialogue.
Mm. Okay.
Or it's the directing, one of the two. It's not Karen Gillan, because she nails it most of the time,
yeah.
and especially in non-James Gunn films that she uh-huh. appears. I think there's just something where when he writes her dialogue, it grates on me. I'm like, that's not what she would say there.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, this is me, the audience member, telling the creator, you're doing your thing.
Like that, that's, sure.
I get how pompous that is, and, you know, forgive me.
Well, but to your point,
just
though,
it feels forced sometimes, some of the dialogue and delivery for her, just for her specifically.
Yeah. I mean, in Endgame, we saw, you know, in the beginning of Endgame, when it was just her and Tony on the ship, and Tony was kind of just teaching her to, like, loosen up and have fun and be human and just do right. like fun things. Even though they were in the middle of the situation that, at least for him, was likely to be dire. Right. And then, you know, later on, we see this connection between her and Rhodey, where, mm-hmm. you know, this realization that, you know, yeah, Rhodey has the suit, but along with the suit, he also has, like, prosthetics to help him even walk. And, you know, she says, well, I wasn't always this way. And he's like, well, I wasn't either. So she finds these
right.
really unique connections with people. And it's, she benefits, the character benefits so well with those, like, really intimate one-on-one interactions. Because I think when she is with the group, she is this just very stoic, straightforward character, just of, mm-hmm. you know, getting whatever thing done. But when she has these opportunities to really interact with somebody, that's when we see that character really open up. And that's what I really appreciate of her.
And we did see a lot of that in this film. And I do appreciate the fact that she ended up somewhere very different from where she started. And yeah. I like her story in this movie. It's yeah. specifically the dialogue, the words, those moments of performances that I didn't like. But as far as her role right. and the moments, yeah, I thought she was great. And I love yeah. where she ended up.
Yeah.
I agree.
Last couple here are kind of getting into, you know, a couple of, I think, worthwhile secondary characters. Kraglin.
Mm-hmm. I like that they did something useful with him.
Yeah.
I laughed out loud when he does the whistle thing and it hits Adam Warlock and he's like, who threw this thing at me?
Yeah.
The first time I saw it, I died. And then I saw it the second time and I was like, oh my God, every time. I don't know why, because he's so serious. And he's like, who threw this thing at me?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Anyways, I really enjoyed it. Sean Gunn actually, and the actor who plays, what was his name? The High Evolutionary, both showed up at the advanced screening. So they were there for a little bit. They answered some questions. They said hello, nice. Waved high five, and walked off, kind of thing. But
okay.
Yeah, they're very wonderful and really sweet people.
Awesome.
I still remember Sean Gunn from Gilmore Girls. So every time he shows up, I'm like, hey, it's the guy from Gilmore Girls. I mean, Sean Gunn. I mean, Kraglin. It still kind of messes with me a little bit, but I liked Kraglin. I kind of I mean, I like that we got to see more of him. I liked his relationship with Cosmo. I know we'll talk about Cosmo later, but I liked that whole thing with him and Cosmo. And I like that we got to see a little bit of Yondu kind of inspire him to use the arrow properly.
I
agree.
A little bit of an offshoot from Kraglin is I feel compelled to give a bit of commentary on Nowhere. For Nowhere to become a mobile death ship, I thought was pretty brilliant. And you know, for that kind of external thing, but also the city of Nowhere. I love the fact that this really rooted into and was embraced as the Guardians' headquarters. We got little inkling of that during the holiday special, but yeah. I love the people who are living there. This very eclectic collection of people and beings, all, you know, just there in harmony, and everyone is playing their part and having a good time. Yeah. And it was just like, it seemed like a cool place to be, until Adam Warlock came and smashed it all to hell. But and now it's apparently overrun with like a gazillion children and small animals and
baby raccoons are so cute.
Yeah. Oh my god, they're so cute.
They are. Like, I love raccoons. My favorite animal.
When Rocket is standing there with all the tiny little raccoons on him, I was like, I want a tiny little raccoon, but also I don't. But also,
like, raccoons and otters are my two favorite animals, and seeing the two of them together in the movie was just like, aww.
Yeah, so cute. Yeah. And then,
So lastly, Cosmo, good dog or bad dog?
Great dog.
Maria Bakalova, I think, was a good choice for the voice actress. And there are parts of me, like, they should not have changed the movie to make this happen, but I want to see more of Kraglin. I want to see more of Cosmo. In the comics, Cosmo was actually kind of like the team, not the team lead, but like the boss of the Guardians.
Cosmo
would give the group missions and they would go out and do missions. Like, Cosmo was the boss. And I love the backstory for Cosmo too. The fact that it was the dog the Russians launched into space. And you know, I mean, that's such a wonderful real life retcon for something that was a tragic thing in reality. But I thought that the use of Cosmo in this movie was a fun little tangential thing that helps invest in the future world building for the Guardians corner of the MCU. I loved it.
And my heart broke when she was like, "You take that back. I'm not a bad dog." I was like, "No, don't call her a bad dog." I was the entire time when she kept going, "You take it back." I was like,
"Yeah." Well, I liked how she redeemed herself at the end. That was a good move.
Well, and yeah, the whole thing with Nowhere and you know, her strength to kind of bring these.
I meant the collapsing walls.
Oh, yes. The smushing. Oh, that was fantastic.
But yes, also what you said, I mean, arguably, yeah, that's a lot more important, but yeah.
So it was cool. It was well done. So it seems there is a character that is rumored to have been snuck into this. There's no confirmation as far as I know, but it's strongly believed that the woman with the white hair who we saw very briefly kind of on this hamster wheel with the High Evolutionary was actually a character from the comics named Phyla Vell, who also became known in the comics as Quasar. So that may be a character that shows up again, that may be a character that is that potentially shows up in the Marvels. Is what some folks are saying, because of the relationship that Quasar does have with some of those groups of characters.
Because of the quantum bands that Quasar possesses, which are very similar to what Ms. Marvel has in the MCU. And I I'd have to look. I thought it had been confirmed by now, but I may be misinformed on that. I'll have to look it up, but it is almost certainly Quasar. If you look at a shot-by-shot comparison of the character in the end credits and put that against a picture from the comic book, you've got her right eye is glowing and her left eye is not. And that's the same way in the comic books. And you've got like the marking on the face is the same as in the comic books. That is absolutely Quasar.
So I completely missed, for some reason, never registered in my brain that she was in the end credit.
Yes, scene. She was.
Yeah. She's sitting on a rock, or she's sitting next to Rocket.
And she contributed when they were talking about
different
musical acts that they like. I forget what her choice was.
Oh, okay, that was her.
It was Korn and something else.
Yeah. Okay, all right, gotcha. Okay, so now that makes sense. All right, so we'll back up one. Well, first of all, before we do get to the mid and end credits scene, any kind of final comments on the movie itself? That things that we haven't mentioned.
Just it was so good, and I don't think it's recency bias. Mm-hmm. What's the term?
Recency bias.
Yeah. I don't think it's that. Like it's just it's a solid movie.
Yeah.
You really invest in what's going on, and it feels fulfilling on an emotional level when you walk out. Like this was, arguably one of the better crafted Marvel movies of the entire MCU. It might not be your favorite, but when you talk about the craftsmanship of it, mm-hmm. I think it was some of the best storytelling we've seen.
Yeah, agreed.
Very good. So the mid-credit scene, Star-Lord returns to Earth, visits his grandfather. They have a little bit of an exchange. His grandfather's reading a paper that had a headline about Kevin Bacon telling all about being abducted by aliens. I thought that was fantastic.
That was actually on
the newspaper.
Was that not the final scene? That was the final one. The final scene.
Okay, good. I thought I was going crazy there for a minute.
No,
that was the very last scene.
Okay. Sorry, I had that mixed up in my head. And then we did get the kind of that. Not a title card thing, but the thing that flashed up saying that Star-Lord will return, which I did not expect. I kind of thought that, okay, everyone has kind of gone to their separate corners. Maybe we might get some characters brought into some other things, but very specifically for Star-Lord to be returning, that's a big thing. So,
but it's interesting because he's on Earth now. So where is he going to return and in what capacity? We could probably see him as either a cameo or tagging along in something like Armor Wars or maybe not Secret Invasion. It's kind of soon, but like he could be in some other Earthbound content.
Yeah.
It would make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the mid-credit scene, what was the mid-credit scene? Because I clearly forgot about it.
That was the one with the group.
Yeah, with the New Guardians.
Oh, okay.
The Rocket, yes. Groot, Kraglin.
You just had them out of order.
Cosmo. Oh, okay. So I flipped them.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yep.
And so, yes, we had Rocket, Groot, Kraglin, Adam Warlock, Cosmo, and clearly Quasar, who I forgot. I mean, kind of a fun thing. We don't know if we're going to see the Guardians again. But, you know, we do have a new team to kind of play with. It would be cool to see them. It certainly seems that Adam Warlock almost needs to be brought more into, you know, if they are going to do some cosmic storylines, it would make sense to bring him more in. Although I think they really need to fix the character.
They need to fix him. Yes. They've got to fix him.
Yeah, and I would hope that Quasar is more than just a cameo that they move on from, but you know, of course, everything has to be brought into a storyline.
Listen, they're bringing in so many young characters, though. We've got a young Hawkeye, we have a young Hulk, we have a young, technically, there's a young Thor, and now you know, young Quasar and a young Miss Marvel. I think that we're definitely going to get more of this actress as Quasar, probably in some kind of Young Avengers kind of a thing at some point on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm still just thoroughly impressed with the giant size Groot, like oak tree size Groot. I thought that was pretty fantastic.
I was like, oh, he looks like kind of like a little, like a grandpa.
I was kind of wondering what they were going to do with this team going forward, because I knew that they were looking to still have a team. Mm-hmm. And I'm still a little on the fence about this, but if you look at it, Adam Warlock is a heavy hitter, if not a character that desperately needs to be fixed. Quasar is also a heavy hitter. I mean, Quasar is a cosmic level mm-hmm. character. Yep. Groot, this version, this iteration of Groot looks pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. Rocket is the strategist and the techie. Kraglin is there. And, you know, Cosmo has telepathy and telekinesis, and telekinesis is always a powerful power to have. So I think that this team actually has some oomph to it. Mm-hmm. And I'd be kind of curious as to what they will do with this team in the future.
Agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can make something good.
Yep. I mean, we also... There's so much discussion about getting Nova, and I think that if they do in fact bring Nova in, I think there is a big opportunity to utilize this Guardians team in Nova. And we've heard things bouncing back and forth between, is Nova going to be a movie or it's going to be a Disney Plus series?
I heard it's going to be a Disney Plus event.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Like, I'm sorry.
You're more recent.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the most recent
presentation.
So, you know, I think it could make sense to introduce that new character by using this new Guardians team as kind of a vehicle to do that and to give him people to interact with. So that's certainly possible there.
Yeah.
All right. So that wraps it up. That is our review of Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Certainly the next episode that John is on, we'll want to get his thoughts on the movie as well. Do hope that everyone else enjoyed the movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. It was great. So Eric, thank you very much for joining us in this review.
Thank you for having me.
And on behalf of Sheba and Eric, thanking all of you for listening to us and hope that you will join us next week for more news and discussion on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Take care.